What's going on, Harlem? How y'all feeling? Well, it's good to see y'all. Thank y'all so much for the prayer request. I heard that everyone heard about my foot. I tried to keep it on the low, but all right, you know, stuff gets out, you know. But the prayer requests were needed, so thank you so much for them. So how's everyone feeling today? We got a lot of stuff going on in America, right? It's a busy time to be in America. Y'all ready for next week? Okay, that sounds a little like people a little. I understand, right? I don't know, right? It's got like, amen. We got a lot of praying to do, right? Making sure we in the right place and position with God. Making sure we understand who we need to be during these times, right? Regardless of everything. Look, so here's what we've been talking about in the Bronx. The words of Jesus. I've been preaching about just different aspects where Jesus has been teaching different lessons. So we're going to continue with that today. Last time I spoke in the Bronx, I talked about the greatest commandment, right? We know what the greatest commandment is. What is it? All right, that sounds good. I think I caught it a few places, right? We know our Bible here, right? We got it, okay? And one of the things I was sharing with them that says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, body, soul, strength, right? All this stuff. Love your neighbor as what? Yourself, right? So love your neighbor as yourself. And I was like, you know what? You can easily translate that to say that being at peace with God, being at peace with others, and being at peace with yourself, right? And we talked about that and got into that, and really it was really good. But this message kind of continues off of that concept of understanding the importance of being at peace with God, being at peace with others, and being at peace with yourself, which is really important factors that we got to kind of dig into. You know, ultimately, when you're doing those things, you're happy. You know, like when you're at peace with God, when you're at peace with others, and you're at peace with yourself, you're a happy person. You know, there's joy, there's peace, there's understanding, right? There's a little, you're not panicking. And so, with that, I get to work with campus students a lot, obviously. I'm with the campus ministry, and we see a lot of stuff, and campus ministry is great. Harlem has a great campus ministry here. You know what I mean? A little quiet. Can we hear it again? There we go. All right. There we go. All right. So, on campus, you know, I was, we're out sharing our faith, doing our thing. Talking to a guy, and one of these guys, he's like, look, I asked him, what's stopping him from being a Christian? Right? Like, what's stopping you from being a Christian? And he said, because I want to be happy. And I was like, okay. Help me understand this, because, you know, I think I'm happy. You know, help me understand what that means. Like, well, religion doesn't equal happiness. And I was like, okay. He said, either you're a good Christian and an unhappy person, or you're a happy person and a sinner. What do y'all think about that? All right, we got some views here. So I laughed. I was like, dude, you got to come to church. I'm going to be talking about this similar topic. You know what I mean? Because I think this is really important for us to understand this aspect of what is true happiness. What does it really mean? You know what I mean? What really brings us joy, what really sustains us and gives us peace, and what's not. And Jesus talks about that big time. We're really going to be parking in one scripture, so you could turn your Bibles to Matthew 5. We're going to talk about this thing called the Beatitudes, right? This is one of Jesus' most famous sermons, the Sermon on the Mount. You know, it's the cornerstone of everything that you hear here in this Matthew 5, 6, and 7. You see being played out throughout the life of Jesus, being either illustrated or reiterated throughout his sermons, his messages, and his actions. So, the Beatitudes, each of these things start out with what statement? Blessed, right? Blessed is the person who dot, dot, dot. It's funny, that term blessed could be translated to the term happy. Because blessed is a happiness that was typically used to describe the joy and the happiness of the gods, right? It's like a divine happiness, like the Greek gods. Like this is their type of joy. Zeus was blessed. He was enjoying the blessedness of all his favor and the things around him. So the term blessed, honestly, could be switched over as happy. So here's what we're going to do today, all right? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to change the term blessed, and we're going to say happy, and see if that changes the context of how we see some of the things that follow after that term, all right? So he says, the Beatitudes, if you replace the word blessed, he's basically saying, here is what happy people do. Here is how happy people behave, right? Matthew 5, starting in verse 1, it says, now when Jesus saw the crowd, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. He said, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, let's break this down real quick. Translation from where we're going is saying what? Happy is the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, what do most people say brings happiness? Yeah, there we go, right? It's okay, y'all can say that. It's all right. Money, right? Money. Even if you don't want to admit that, right, because we Christians, right? So even if we ain't going to admit that, reality is, some of us would say, it might not bring happiness, but it sure would help, right? Look at y'all. See, there you go. All right, y'all being honest. I appreciate that, okay? I appreciate the honesty. Jesus says here, says rich, poor, regardless, that doesn't make you happy. See, a lot of times when we view it as poor, so that means you got to be poor. No, he's not talking about your physical finances here. Rich or poor, regardless, that doesn't make you happy. The question is, what's the condition of your spirit? What's the condition of your spirit? See, to be poor in spirit means that you have acknowledged that no matter how wealthy you are or are not, you are completely dependent on God and God alone. See, someone who embraces their daily dependence on God, regardless on what they have, having the ability to say and live like they are no less dependent on God today than when they first began, that changes everything. But, you know, sometimes the acquisition of more things can make us forget that our dependency is on God, right? See, now, I want y'all to go back. Some of y'all go back. Some of y'all been to church for some time, right? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I mean, Jabari was just up here. 14, 15, right? 16. We got some experienced Christians in here, all right? Remember, I'm a little Southern twang come out, so y'all caught that. Y'all fine with that, okay? Thank you. Don't judge me, okay? All right, so, look, after a while, when you think back when you first started Christianity, you probably didn't have as much as you got now, right? You needed Jesus, right? Someone's like, look, matter of fact, Jesus an upgrade in me. You know what I mean? Like, you look at your life now, it's like, man, things are good. I go back, man, I remember when I started off this walk, I was living in a two-bedroom apartment, jam-packed with single brothers. You know, we're trying to keep that rent down to 150. You know what I mean? Like, we was working hard, all right? Roman news every day. You know what I mean? Like, it was serious. You know what I mean? Like, this is how we was living. And now I look back, it's funny because I live in the same house, which is now three rooms, but I got two children. I have a wife. And I'm like, man, God is good. But you know what? Sometimes we could stop and think, I'm good. I'm really good. And that fervor, that passion we had could kind of change up a little bit, right? Spiritual dependency is the producer of our present comfortabilities. But we could forget that. See, spiritual dependency is the sustainer of the things that actually matter to us. When we really stop and think about it, my question to you is, do you live each day like you are completely dependent on God? Like, do you live each day like you are completely dependent on God? Not that you tell someone that, because I know y'all good Christians. Y'all going to tell people the right thing. I get that. My question is, if you look at your life, not someone else, look at your life, does it reflect the conscious of a man or woman that is poor in spirit, completely dependent on God? Because see, the moment that you put your trust in your riches, instead of the one who richly provides for you? You know what happens? And by riches, let me define what I mean by this term riches. By riches, I mean the opportunities that you have, your education, what you have, what you own, what you could borrow from, your job, your car, who likes you, all the stuff that we tend to gain confidence from, right? When I say riches, I'm talking about that. So the moment you put your trust in your riches, those things, instead of the one who richly provides, the moment we transfer our trust from the provider to the product, we become unhappy people. We become unhappy. Look, this is a major key alert right here. I want y'all to catch this, all right? I want y'all to catch this here, all right? Think about this. This is huge. This is huge. Because all of a sudden, once you transfer that, once you take your trust and you take it from the provider and you put it to the product, right? Once you do that, what you really do, all of a sudden, it's all on you to produce the outcome. You know what I'm saying? See, after a while, you can be like, yeah, look what I've done. Look what I've done. Then after you trusted God up to this point, and now you're looking back like, man, look what I have. Look where I'm at. Then it's all on you to do what? To keep producing. To keep making it happen. Then it's like, man, well, I got to work more hours. Man, I got to do more. It's all on you. You've changed the dynamic now. So now, like, man, I got to miss church because I got to be at work. I got to do that. And you've changed everything because now it's all on you to control the outcome. And reality is this, church, none of us have all that power. We don't have it. You can influence, but you can't control. You can't control the outcome. This is why it don't matter if you're rich, you're poor, you're middle class or no class. All people who are unhappy when they put themselves in that position to have to create the outcome of their lives, to sustain this material wealth that they desire. We got to pull back and remember, look, God and God alone, I'm dependent on God. I am grateful to God because the things that really matter to me could be taken in an instant. Don't matter how many hours you work. Don't matter how much money you got. No, how many degrees you got, degrees upon degrees. It don't matter, church. That person you love could die. And ain't none of that going to save it. Your children will get sick. Things happen. So who are you really dependent on? The Bible says here, he's like, look, blessed are the poor in spirit. Happy are the poor in spirit because they know that no matter what goes on in my life, no matter what's happening, who's in control? Y'all sound quiet. That's gospel. Look, no matter what goes on in your life, God is in control. So the question is, who are you leaning on? You have to. Happy are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Happiness is not dependent on how rich you are physically, but it's dependent on how poor you are spiritually. Poor people don't try to find satisfaction in the things that they have no control over. They have no control over. If you got it, God bless you. If you don't, God still blessed you. You know, so sometimes we got to change the way we see these things. Because, yeah, happiness is in this quality. The other thing it says is, verse 4 says, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. The translation we're using says it's going to be what? Happy are those who mourn. Does that make sense? Oh, it do? Okay, let's see it. You know what I mean? Like, let's see. We think about mourning, it's like, wait a minute, mourning ain't a good thing. Well, we tend to not think of it that way, right? Happy are those who mourn, sounds like an oxymoron. But here's the reality. Only an emotionally connected person can mourn. Y'all caught that? Only an emotionally connected person can mourn. See, we live in a day and age where I could video chat my brother in Arizona. I could text my grandma in Atlanta. She probably won't text me back, but, you know, I could see pictures from my friends over in South Africa on Facebook. Instantaneous, right? We are literally living in what? The information age. I mean, we could communicate with so many people at once before an episode of Walking Dead is over, right? Like, it's just that easy. It's so easy for us to connect and reach out and talk and connect with people. But with all the connection, the opportunity for connection, or as I like to say, the illusion of connectivity, how connected do people really feel today? Like, how connected are people really feeling today? We live in a time where connecting is so easy, yet loneliness, depression, low self-esteem, all these things are on the rise. And we can act naive if we want to, but this is real. Depression is real. People really, this is a real struggle. Loneliness is real. It's like, how can you be lonely? How can you suffer depression when you could connect with so many people without leaving your house? Well, sometimes there's such thing as false connectivity, right? Something's just an illusion. Because though we are blessed to live in this time where we have the opportunity of this, it's tough. See, the fear of rejection, the fear of loss, the fear of death stop us from pursuing connectivity with people. So when Jesus said, man, blessed are those who mourn, what is he really saying here? And he says, for they will be comforted. He's saying, look, blessed are those, happy are those who really had the opportunity to connect. That's a happy person when you're able to really connect. Look, we live in this age. I mean, I think I made a joke last time I was here. I hate claiming that I'm part of the millennial generation, but I am. You know what I mean? I'm right at the cusp, right? But that's, and we're in this age where we are internet everything. Tech savvy. I mean, even our watches tell us who's calling us nowadays. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's where we're at now. But there's so many people who feel so disconnected. See, Christ is like, look, I want you to know what real connection is. That's really what a happy person is, man. Like, you got to be able to connect. We have this fear of doing this. You know, I was hurt, so I don't connect. I lost someone, so I don't connect. I may lose someone, so I don't connect. And we isolate ourselves. He's like, look, if you're trusting in God, you don't have to fear loss. If you're trusting in God, you're secure. I got you. I got you. So even when you go through that moment of a loss or a death, these are realities. We can't avoid them. Grateful to see everyone here, but we might not see everyone here next Sunday. That's life. The question is, if you're trusting in God, you don't have that fear of loss, so you could make the most of your opportunity now and have genuine connection. Happy are those people who are connected, for they will be comforted. For they will be comforted. Verse 5, it says, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Translation, happy are the meek. How many of us grew up with that characteristic? I want to be meek when I grow up. Not Meek Mill. I want to be meek when I grow up, right? I want to be meek. No one has that mindset. No one came into it like that. That's not a characteristic, because what does meekness mean to us? Weakness. There we go. Meekness means weakness, right, to us. That's how we tend to define it. And so really, we're viewing this as happy are the weak, for they will inherit the earth. What? I don't catch that one, right? Here's what Jesus is saying. Happy are the meek. Meek, another translation for the term meek. Actual one is humble. And the truth, let me give y'all a real definition of humble, because I think sometimes we get that definition twisted sometimes. Here's how you properly define humility. Humility is to know your place. It's the root term of it. That doesn't mean that you're higher than you really are, right? That you're better than you really are. Or it doesn't also mean that you're lower than you are. It's to know who you are and accept and embrace that. That's true meekness, having a realistic and sober judgment of oneself. That's what it means to be humble. That's what it means to be meek, to have a realistic and sober judgment of oneself. Not walking around all weak and cowardly. I'm nobody. No, I'm nothing. Where you going? Oh, I'm just nothing, and I'm grateful because you even let me walk in the door. What? Like, bruh, hold your head up. You know what I mean? Like, that's a pride. It's, you know, it's because that's not real. That's fake. True humility is being honest about one's strengths and weaknesses. You have strengths. It's okay to be honest about it. Did y'all hear me? Sometimes that gets me in church sometimes. I love the church. I'm part of the church. But sometimes we can walk around real, like, weird, all right? Like you ain't got no strengths. Like, the Lord ain't blessed you with no talents and gifts and abilities. You know what I mean? To act like the Lord hasn't blessed you is not disrespectful to you. Not disrespectful to you. It's disrespectful to God. You know what I mean? So, yeah, you have, be honest about your strengths. Be honest about your weaknesses as well. Don't act like you could do something that you know you can't do. All right? So it's like, yeah, be honest about those things. Knowing one's place in creation, which is below God, but still has value. All right? We're not God. We're not a God. But that don't mean you don't have value. You're not the best part of creation, but you're an equally important part of creation. You know what I mean? Like, these are the things that we have to be able to embrace that. And it's okay to embrace. When you do, when you have that, when you have real honest, when you have to be real with yourself, guess what? You're happy. Because you ain't got to hold up a persona. You ain't got to be fake. Run around thinking, they all think I could do this, you know what I mean? So I got to pull it off, right? Like, you know how stressful that is? Y'all know how stressful it is. Just be real. I could do this. I can't do that. Bro, seriously, I can't do it. Like, you know what I mean? Or, you know, I can. And thank you for acknowledging it. I appreciate that. Glory to God. He gave it to me. Right? Is that hard to do? Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the meek. It says, for they will inherit the earth. Because you can really be a part of the earth. You can enjoy the world that God placed you in. When you know, this is who I am. And you accept it and embrace it. Jesus is really taught, he's given us keys here on how to really be happy. He's like, I don't want you to put on the persona. I don't want you to be fake. Just be real. Be meek. It's okay. I know you're not great at everything. I didn't make you great on everything on purpose. I gave you some weaknesses on purpose. Right? Verse 6, it says, blessed are those who what? Hunger and thirst for what? There we go. Righteousness. For they will be filled. Happy are those who desire to do the right things. Ain't that the truth, though? Like, when you desire to do, when you have that hunger, that thirst to do what's right, that's a happy person. Why is that? Let's see. They're happy because, guess what? They have no guilt or regret. They have a clear conscience before God about their lives. You know, when I talked about the greatest commandment, my last sermon, I talked about, you know, being at peace with God, being at peace with others, and being at peace with yourself. Do you know what type of happiness that brings? When you're at peace with God, when you know, like, I've made my amends with my Lord and Savior, I'm good. You know what I mean? I've made my amends with my brother and my sister. Yeah, we had issues, but you know what? We're at peace. It probably ain't perfect, but you know what? We're at peace. And I'm at peace with myself. I'm not beating myself for what I'm not good at, what I ain't do. I'm like, I accept me. Flaws and all, I accept me. Right? You have no guilt and shame for the things you've done wrong. See, when you hunger and you thirst for righteousness, it's like you're going to be filled. Why is it? Why are they happy? Because, man, you know your intentions are what? Good. You know that your desire, you're trying to do the right thing. That you're not running around sleeping around with everybody. You know what I mean? Or hurting people, trying to scheme people. You know, it doesn't matter how tough you try to put on the front. That destroys your conscience. Because you know what? When you're at home, laying in your bed by yourself, you know what you're thinking about? You know what's running through your mind? The people you done hurt. The people you done got over on. The people that you done mistreated. So God's saying, like, listen, here, I'm trying to help you to be happy. Hunger and thirst for righteousness. Because you know what? When you do that, you're going to be happy. You're going to be happy. You ain't got to look, check your bag. Like, yo, she might try to scratch my car up. You know what I mean? Because you know you did her wrong. You know, you looking out the window every night. Like, is she out there? You know what I mean? Like, you know, can't even sleep. Right? It's just your conscience ain't clear. Because you know you done dirt. You've been wrong. Righteousness, I always say righteousness really is doing the right things. Hunger and thirst to do what's right. Sometimes, church, we got to ask ourselves these tough questions in the moment. Tough questions. What's the right thing to do here? Right? What's the right thing to do here? What's the right way to respond here? Right? Married folks, right? People at your job, what's right? Oh, she said it. What's the right way to respond? You know, what's the right thing to think here? Our responses, our actions, and our thoughts, making them righteous, clears us. See, the problem is we give into the moment too much. We give into the feeling, the situation, right? And then we're left unhappy. Because see, here's how it is. You ever have an argument, for those who are married or even know people, you have an argument with your spouse, right? And in your heart, you want to say something. Because you know when you say this, in the moment, right, it might make you feel real good. Oh, y'all ain't, I'm the only one, it's just me that goes through that. Dang, y'all, I just feel like I'm jacked up. Because Harlem, y'all need to help me out. Because I know for me, right, there's times, you know, I love my wife. She is a saint, right? She is amazing, the most beautiful person in the world. But, man, we get through these times. There's these times, man. And I'd be like, yo, I want to, you know what I mean? I just want to say this. And, it, you know, in your heart, it's like, man, if I say this, it's going to be so good. It's going to be so good, right? Y'all know that you have an argument with someone. You know you just want to drop that. You know, like, oh, I got something for you. Say something. And now, let's keep it real. There's times you've done it right. Right? You did it. Go ahead, nod your head. It's okay. It's all right. You done it. We've all done it, right? Now, when you did it, there was that moment where you were like, ha! Right? There's that moment. Y'all some sinners, man. Y'all just like, oh, jackal. You know, there's that, right? There's that moment where you're like, yeah, but guess what? How does it feel after? You like, dang. You know, baby, I ain't mean that. Right? You go off in that zone. We get there. You know, no one ever says this. No one ever says, man, if I could go back to college, I would skip more classes. Right? No one's like, yo, man, if I could just go back to high school, I would get in so much more trouble. Like, man. I would do more things. Like no one ever says those things. Our greatest regrets are normally those times when we knew better and didn't do better. Right? Our greatest regrets in life, when we step back and we view, it's like, it's sometimes not even the things that you did wrong and you didn't even know it. Because, right, you can't even hold yourself accountable. But them times when he's like, I knew I shouldn't have said that. I knew I shouldn't have did that. I knew I should have went to class. I knew I should have just studied. I knew I shouldn't have went with them. Why did I go there with these people? I knew what they was going to do. I know her. Why did I even hang out with her? Like, she crazy. I knew better. Like, you know what I mean? Like, don't y'all know? Like, let's keep 100. We know it's some times where you knew better. But you didn't what? You didn't do better. So Jesus is like, yo, happy are those people who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Because you know what? If you are hungry and you are thirsty, you know what you do? You get something to eat. You get something to drink. Right? If you are hungry for righteousness, thirsting for righteousness, you know what you're going to do? You're going to be righteous. You're going to be righteous. So in those moments when you know better, if you're hungry and thirsty, you're going to do what? You're going to do better. And you know what's going to happen at the end? You're going to be a what? Happy. Right? Go ahead and smile. Y'all going to be happy. You know what I mean? It's big. Jesus is, it's simple truths here. Jesus is dropping simple truths here. Blessed, verse 7. Blessed are the what? Merciful. For what? They will be shown. This one. You know, I'm borrowing this definition here that I got from this, but it says, happy are the relationally generous. Relationally generous. Happy are relationally generous people. Happy are those that give people goodness, whether they deserve it or not. There's some of y'all about to struggle. All right? Don't worry, I'm one of them. It says, happy are those who are not trying to get back or seek revenge on others. Happy are those who forgive. Happy are those who don't hold grudges. Happy are those who are not bitter. Happy are those who are not waiting for their big payback. That's a happy person. From someone in their past or present. See, look, reality is this. To this day, in my short existence on earth, I have yet to find or meet a happy, bitter person. I ain't met them yet. Have you met them? You ain't met them yet? I ain't met them. I've looked, you know what I mean? I've seen some bitter people. They weren't happy. I have yet to meet a happy person that's holding a grudge. I've yet to meet them. I've yet to meet a person, a happy person who's trying to get payback from being mistreated in a previous relationship. Yet to meet that person. But I have met people, especially in our church. I've met people who have went through hell and back, who went through some serious traumatic experiences, who've experienced things that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. People who've been raped, abused, and hurt badly, mistreated. Real stuff. Real things. I've met people, especially in our church, who've gone through those experiences. And they're some of the most happy, giving, relationally generous people I think I've ever met in my life. They're some of the brightest lights in the room. They have joy. They have happiness. Because they came around the interim to show and teach others the incredible gift of grace and mercy. They gave their mother and father exactly what their mother and father didn't deserve. They gave that ex exactly what that ex didn't deserve. They gave that former employee exactly what that former employee did not deserve. They were relationally generous. And even though they never got their payback, they never got revenge, they never heard them say, I'm sorry, they still showed mercy. How are you doing in that department today? How are you doing in that? Because here's the reality, church. It says, happy are those who show mercy, or who are merciful. For what? You're not going to get what you don't give. Hear me on this. The Bible is clear. Jesus is clear. He repeats this. Remember I said that the things we hear in the Sermon on the Mount are repeated throughout the Gospels. He repeats this over and over again. You don't show mercy, guess what? You won't receive mercy. Now, me sharing this, hear me, church, is not me belittling your experience. Because there are brothers and sisters, there are people in this auditorium right now who probably went through some things that are painful. And I'm not saying you don't have a right to be hurt, to feel used or mistreated. But what I'm telling you is this. That if you continue to hold on to that, and you don't give that to God, you won't be happy. See, happiness isn't always dependent on what's going on around you. Happiness is dependent from what we're hearing here about what's going on within you. It's about what's going on within you. So the world could be falling apart, but if in your heart you're doing the best that you know and that you can, because who can you really control in this world? Only you. That's it. I wish I could control other people. I wish I could control my kids. You know what I mean? I wish, you know, without getting locked up sometimes. I wish that you could, you know what I mean? I wish we could do certain things, right? But you can't. The only person you can really control is yourself. That's just the reality of it. If you don't show mercy, you will not get mercy. We're going to start wrapping this through. Last verse 8 says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. This is my favorite, honestly. Because it's blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. This isn't talking about a lot of times we hear this and we're thinking about eternity. So they're going to see God when they die and go to heaven. That's not what the scripture is talking about, though, here. He said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God, meaning that you will see, you will be able to see in your circumstances, through opportunities that are given to you, through invitations, through situations, you will see God working through these things. You can see, okay, here's what God's doing here. You ever heard that? You ever said, oh, I can see what God's doing here. I see what's happening here. See, when you're pure in heart, you can see that happier the pure in heart, because no matter what's going on in their life, they can really see, okay, here's what's happening. They could decipher. They got discernment to be able to tell, here's what God's trying to do here. Here's where God's leading me here. Here's where I need to respond like this. All right, it's looking like this, but I see what God's trying to do. You ever catch yourself sometimes where you're like, man, I was blindsided. I didn't see that coming. That ever happened to people? I didn't see that coming. Man, I wish I had the clarity to know to stay home today. Right? I wish I had the, like, why did I do that? That mindset where you have that, sometimes, hear me, when your heart is dirty, you don't see clearly. You can't see what God's trying to do. When your heart is tainted, your eyes are tainted. He said, blessed are the pure in heart. Sometimes we need to stop back and purify ourselves. Get ourselves back right where we need to be with God. This is why, you know, we talk a lot, especially in our church, we talk a lot about having your quiet times. I like to call them quality times. Having quality time with God. You know what I mean? Just real genuine time to what? Purify yourself. Our lives are going through the strainer of this world. This world is dirty. Right? You turn on TV and stuff like that, sometimes you got to go wash your face after a while. Like, it's just, I mean, it's just like, There's stuff you see, it's like, what did I didn't even try? It's just a commercial, right? It's crazy. You have to spend time daily purifying yourself. Asking yourself, man, how am I doing with my Creator? With my God? How's my relationship with my God right now? Because you're going to embark on situations, circumstances, things. And if your heart's not clean, you're going to deal with those things in an unclean manner. See, an argument could easily be quelled with a pure heart. You know what? It's cool. My bad. I'm sorry. But when your heart's not pure, you can't easily deal with stuff like that. It ain't that easy. We have to make sure we're purifying ourselves. Daily time with God helps us to purify ourselves, because when we're able to do that, we're happy because we see God working in any circumstance, in any situation, no matter where we're at in life. We see God working clearly. Have you been doing that for you? Purifying your heart, purifying your eyes. Man, there's some things you probably don't need to be watching. You might need to unsubscribe from some stuff on your cable television network. Right? You might need to unsubscribe some things. You might need to do some stuff to purify yourself so that you could be able to see God. Church, Christianity needs you to be able to see God working in whatever circumstances are going on. I made some jokes earlier about what's going to happen next week. Church, we need you to be able to see God working through whatever circumstances. The world needs you to be able to see God, because guess what? People are going to need to hear from you. What's going on? How do I make sense of this? All the stuff we see, the police brutality, all these different things that we see going on in the world, how do we make sense of that? Well, if your heart's not pure, what you going to tell them? Right? Like, what you going to say? How are you going to respond? You have to purify yourself, because you know what? Not everyone's going to come to this auditorium to hear this message. But they'll sit next to you on the bus or train or at work. They'll be near you. But if you don't have a pure heart, then you're looking with the same glass lenses that they're looking through. And then they'll be, oh, you a Christian? But you were just talking like me. You were just dealing with the stuff like I deal with it. You don't see it any different than I see things. That's why I don't need to go to church. You need to look different. But if your heart's not pure, then you look just like everyone else. You don't see God. Verse 9, blessed are the peacemakers, for they are called children of God. This one is simple, because what is God all about? Peace. He's all about peace. You need to ask yourself, are you making peace in this world? See, troublemakers aren't happy people. How many of y'all troublemakers? So y'all is funny. You know, troublemakers aren't happy people. God's whole goal is about restoring peace on earth. He says you'll be children of God because what? Children always do what their parents do. Sometimes. Train them, right? Right? If you're really a child of God, then you're about bringing peace on this earth. You're about bringing peace here on earth. Not causing trouble, bringing peace. The last few are very difficult, I think. Because it says, blessed are those who persecute or persecuted for righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Happy are those who are persecuted. Reality is this, church. No matter what you do in life, you will suffer. You will suffer. Whether you're doing what's right or you're doing what's wrong, you're going to suffer. But you can only be happy on one side of the equation. You can only really be happy on one side of the equation. Because if you suffer for doing wrong, the wrong things, who can you blame? Right? You're getting what you deserve. You don't have peace with God, you don't have peace with yourself, you don't have peace with others because you caused it. Happy are those, blessed are those who pursue righteousness even when it costs them. Because you can be happy doing the right thing and facing the consequences. But you can't be happy doing the wrong thing facing the consequences. It don't work that way. So the question is, man, where are you standing in that equation? Where are you at with that? Man, happiness is all about the results. It's about where your heart's at. You could choose today to live a meek life. You could choose today and choose right now to live a merciful life. You could choose right now to be a peacemaker. You could choose right now to hunger and thirst for righteousness. You could choose these things. Like right now, you can make that decision. And by God's grace, even if it means to change a lot of stuff in your life, you need to make some rearrangement. You need to tell some people deuces. You know what I mean? Like, you need to tell other people hello. You know what I mean? Like, you might need to do those things. But you know what? In doing that, you're creating that environment to really experience the happiness, the divine happiness that we're talking about here. The divine happiness. Now, at the end of this whole sermon, Jesus wraps this up, I think, beautifully. Because he wraps up the whole Sermon on the Mount with this parable. Right? It's a parable. And he says this in verse 24. He says, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice." Let me catch you on this. Everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice. Not, that was a good point, I'm going to write it down. Not, man, that brother or sister really needs to hear this sermon. They need to work on that. They need to be more merciful. They need to be more a peacemaker. Oh, that was deep, but you leave it right here in the auditorium. No, Jesus, like, puts it into practice. It's like a wise man who built his house on the rock. This church, hear me, this took time. It takes time to build a house. No one builds a house overnight. These characteristics, these qualities, these things that I'm sharing are not things that are just going to instantaneously become a part of your life. Guess what? It's going to what? Take time. I'm going to keep it 100 with you. Jesus did. He kept it 100. It takes time. Building a brand new house is not easy. It's not built overnight. So the house is not immediately accessible, right? You can't just walk into it. No. If you're building it, you don't do that. So the person who hears these words of mine and says from this day forward is like a person who began building their house on a rock. Nothing has changed immediately. Nothing has changed immediately. But something has changed eventually. Something has changed eventually. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. Church, you don't get no credit for being here this Sunday. No credit. It's good, it's great. I'm happy to see you. I'm sure the person next to you is happy to see you. But in God's mind, you get no credit for hearing or listening. No credit. But get this. Just like the person who built their house on the rock, it's not easy to build a house on sand. There's no immediate accessibility for building your house on the sand. There is no immediate consequences or outcome for building your house on the sand. Both homes take time to build. Both homes gave no immediate consequences nor outcomes when you're building it. Either way, both homes will both experience what? A storm, though. They both experience storms, but only one house will survive. See, your character are the things that's being talked about here. Your character. Reality is, character is not developed instantaneously. Spirituality is not developed instantaneously. It takes time. But guess what? Bad character is not developed instantaneously. being unspiritual is not developed instantaneously. They both take time. They both cost money. They both cost an investment. The question is, which one are you going to invest into? Because they're both going to experience a storm. They're both going to deal with issues and drama. God's like, look, you want to be happy? You want to survive? Then let's build these things into your character today. Let's start now. Get the supplies. Get the tools. Get the advice. Get the input. Build a found and strong foundation so that when you do deal with the drama, because life comes with drama. Y'all know that? If you didn't know that, another major key alert, life comes with drama. All right, put that in your pocket. It's true. Even whether you're a Christian or you're a non-Christian, you're going to deal with some stuff. The question is, who are you going to deal with it with? Who's by your side? With God, you'll survive the storm. Without him, you built on the sand. Church, don't just hear these words and be like, that was great. It's good. Some new insight. That does me no favors. It's not about me. It's not about the church. It's really about you. If you hear these words, put them into practice and see what God does. And to God be the glory. Thank you, guys.